You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. My guest today is Ole Damgaard, receiver of the Prague Peace Prize for 2016. He is an author, international speaker, former journalist and investigator, who has dedicated the last 30 years of his life to researching many of the global conspiracies. His main focus has been to find out the truth about the assassinations of JFK, the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and John, plus the terror attacks of 9/11, Norway, Oklahoma City, and many more. He is also considered a world-leading expert on false flag operations, and has been part of exposing several planned state-sponsored terror acts. He has written the following books: Coup d'etat in slow motion, parts 1 and 2, Shadow of Tears, the power book Remind Me, and is currently working on a global tour of terror, part 1 and 2, The Elusive Enigma, and the book Guilty Victim. He is also busy with a series of documentaries aiming at exposing many of the false flag operations that are currently hitting modern society. He will be a key speaker at the JFK Assassination Conference in Dallas this coming November. You can find out more on his website, www.lightonconspiracies.com. So let's welcome him back to the show now. Hi, Ole, how are you?
I'm really good, thank you, Lance. Thank you so much for having me back.
Oh, I always love chatting with you. I caught your new video on the death of Martin Luther King, and I think the listeners would be interested in finding out some of the things that you've discovered about his death. I thought that might be a good place for us to start.
Yeah, I think since Martin Luther King's death is one of the main, what can you say, one of the most historical important events during the 1960s and onwards, and has affected the world in so many different ways that most people have no idea about the magnitude of what actually changed by his death. So I think it's very important to really find out who was behind it, what actually happened, and are these powers still intact? Sort of, are they still working?
Yeah.
And I would answer the question myself with the answer yes, that the powers that were part of taking out JFK, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, and so many others are still in action and are affecting our lives tremendously.
Yes, yes, yes. I definitely agree with you on that one. So what else can you tell us about this that we probably don't know?
I think maybe I should just go back in time, because it was Martin Luther King was an extraordinary human being, I would say. One of the people that I really, really admire, him and Mahatma Gandhi, are two of my big idols. And the reason why I admire them so much is because they had the strength, the inner strength, and the conviction of nonviolence to stand up in total peace against very brutal forces. And this is also why both of them and so many other have been taken out, because the power behind these assassinations are the same powers that are behind so many wars and drugs and so many of these dark negative things that has affected the world.
Right.
So unfortunately, it's the good guys that bites the dust in this game.
Right, right. And of course, that was a window of time when I remember I was in grade school when Kennedy was shot. And that seemed to be that. I think you mentioned in your show that we didn't really recover from that, maybe ever. It was a decade before that started to, the wounding from that started to dissipate. But I think to this day, because we haven't had closure on it, even if we understand or suspect those same forces and people running the world, that we still have not had closure on that one and so many other deaths. And there was a spate of them in the 1960s.
And the reason why we haven't got closure and so on is because it was a coup d'etat when JFK was taken out in Dealey Plaza, November 22nd, 1963. It was a coup d'etat in the US, but also, I would say, almost in the Western world, mm-hmm. where there was a very, very brutal takeover. And the power structure that took over that day have stayed in power ever since. They've just changed the glossy front page with a different face of a new so-called president, but these have just been front figure puppets of the same machine of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm,
so this is also why when you study the JFK assassination and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Robert Kennedy and Che Guevara and so many of these assassinations, they're carried out very similarly, not always identical on a street level, but the whole structure around how the whole setup is done, with a lone crazy guy, a patsy that is blamed for the whole thing, with an investigation that is part of the crime, only there to cover it up, followed by commissions that are part of the crime, only there to cover up the investigation, to cover up the crime, and so on. The whole thing is based on the same template. And so when I look at these assassinations, it's becoming clearer and clearer over these three decades that they're using the same bullet point list exactly. And with many, many, many times, they've used the exact same players. And this is what we're going to see here in this assassination as well.
Mm. Well, I would guess that they would have to use the same players because this is something that is so closely held as far as secrecy goes that they would need to have people that they could that are completely in the pocket, so to speak.
Yeah, I totally agree. And since I've spent so many thousands of hours looking into the JFK assassination and also identified more or less everyone involved, it is very interesting for me to see some of the same players appear here again, and just like in the Robert Kennedy assassination as well. Because the killing of JFK was in 63, in November 63.
Uh-huh.
And then it was just like you said, the whole world was like in a state of shock at the same time as the whole hippie movement, the drug, the free love, all of these things started arising as well. Where the U.S., it was almost at a point of civil war. The whole civil rights movement was there. It was total chaos in the midst of all of this with the Vietnam War, and where people like Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy became very, very important when it came to the possibility of ending the Vietnam War, and thus also making massive problems for the military-industrial complex, for the mafia, for the drug import industry, and so on, that was using this war as a cover for all of these things. So mm-hmm. this is one of the reasons why Martin Luther King was targeted.
Right. Well, as you probably will be quick to point out, all of these things are interconnected. And I would guess that probably the root of these has a lot of it has to do with trillions and quadrillions of dollars in war materials and so on and so forth. So a lot of the motivation has to do with money, but then it's also involved with power because they, as you said, the power structure really radically shifted with the death of Kennedy. Can you connect the dots with the death of Kennedy and then what followed with Martin Luther King, and then how King was not necessarily dead on the balcony when we thought he was?
Yeah, this is the thing, the new type of information that will come out today, and we own all of this to a man called William Pepper, Bill Pepper, a lawyer who was the defendant of James Earl Ray, the accused assassin, also of Sirhan Sirhan, the accused assassin of Robert Kennedy, and so on, and a personal friend of Martin Luther King the last year he was alive. I think he spent some 39 years trying to uncover what actually happened this day in Memphis. And so all of this we're talking about today is thanks to his research. Anyway, but like you said, in November 63, it was like a knockout blow to many people. The whole optimism, the air just left the whole population. There was sort of like a knockout blow.
Yeah.
But then after a few years, this started getting back, the power in the normal person in the street starting coming back. And there was suddenly a fresh air, a possibility to end and change and so on. And the two front figures for this were Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy. Mm. And I think not everybody is aware of that. I believe there were strong plans for Robert Kennedy to become the next president, to take over after Lyndon Johnson, and with Vice President Martin Luther King. And I think that was what scared them absolute shitless, these people in the background of these things. So there, what people are often not aware of is that there was only 1 month between the assassination of Martin King and Robert Kennedy. There was the 4th of April and the beginning of June when Robert Kennedy was taken out. And I believe that they tried to scare Robert Kennedy to stop running for president by killing King, but he just continued, and then they took him out as well.
Well, as you pointed out in previous shows, none of these things happen for a particular reason. They're multidimensional and multifaceted because they cover a range of different agendas. So people have a difficult time wrapping their heads around that, but they're are multiple agendas that are being addressed in these assassinations. And I think it's also important to remember that Tavistock was involved with the whole hippie movement and LSD, and Timothy Leary, who's said to be a CIA asset, and that all of this is really set up. All the big movements that we see that seem to be for freedom are actually established by the same core that is assassinating people. So it's a play produced by a number of people, but there are very few that are writing the script at the top.
Yeah, as bizarre as it sounds, that is exactly correct, I would say. And when you look at political assassinations, this is very often the final solution for these. They have tried other ways to get rid of these problem characters. They try to discredit them, they try to threaten, they try to everything, because it's quite messy to carry out an assassination like this, because the whole thing that follows afterwards.
Uh-huh.
But at certain points in world history, you will see that very charismatic new leaders start arising, and if necessary, then these are the people that will be taken out. And both Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy were exactly these type of characters, where they're one of those biggest reasons, I think, it was their popularity. I mean, they were coming to a point of almost like a rock star status, and where if they said go left, you know, millions would follow. Go right, millions would follow. And this is just like with Lady Diana, JFK, many of these other ones. When they get to a position in their life where they're so loved and so admired and so on, that is where they become very dangerous to the establishment behind these brutal forces.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think it was John Kennedy, that was also investigating eliminating the Federal Reserve, which is not a government agency, but which is a private banking cartel that just prints up money and rents it back to the government. So that's a big scam that's been going on since Jekyll Island, and so that's another element that could be woven into that.
Totally. I mean, the Federal Reserve, that's one of them. He wanted to crush the CIA into 1,000 pieces. He wanted to get rid of the mafia. He wanted to get out of Vietnam. I mean, big, big, big things. He wanted to get rid of J. Edgar Hoover. He wanted to put Lyndon Johnson in jail. I mean, big, big things were on the move here. And the same, had Robert Kennedy become the new president with Martin King as vice president, I can tell you things would have changed there as well. So they were getting very desperate to get rid of him. Mm-hmm. And especially J. Edgar Hoover hated Martin Luther King. He hated him. Mm-hmm. And he had a series of meetings in 67. And in 68, together with one of them was with H.L. Hunt, which was at that point the wealthiest person in the U.S., an oil baron who was very, very much involved in the JFK assassination. And H.L. Hunt, he thought that he could destroy Martin King's reputation, and so through his radio program. But J. Edgar Hoover kept saying, no, this guy will not back down. We need to kill him. We need him dead. So what happened in 1967 was that the plan to take out Martin King was starting to form. Mm. And there was a search for the perfect patsy. And James Earl Ray, he was a con man, a low-life criminal, you know, not very, with a very high IQ. Also somebody that it seems like he was at one point working for the OSS and the CIA on a very low level, but he had a controller and so on. And because of this, they found him to be the perfect patsy, the perfect guy. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing was set up so that Clyde Tolson, who was number two in the FBI and also J. Edgar Hoover's alleged lover, he was often going to Memphis. He had lots of meetings with the Godfather in Memphis and the Dixie Mafia there. And he was given $25,000 to bring to the Godfather of the Dixie Mafia. And then from him, this money would be transferred into to the prison warden where in this Missouri prison where James Earl Ray was sitting. And it was through and with this money that an escape was made possible. So because James Earl Ray, this was not a prison where people normally escaped from. So it was almost like they opened the door for him, let him out. And then from then on, he had like a controller that followed him around, or he was surrounded by people, him not knowing what was going on, that was controlling his movement around and so on. And one of the people that were doing that, as far as I've been able to find out, was a man called Charles Frederick Rogers. He used to work for the ONI, the Naval Intelligence Agency. And he is, when you look at the pictures from the JFK assassination, they're very famous pictures of three tramps that was arrested. He is the first one in the line, also called Frenchie. You got... yeah, it doesn't matter. But that is the guy. And he was there traveling around with James Earl Ray many places. He was. They went to different abroad, to Canada, to Mexico, to get different stuff, you know, everything from cars to TVs and also guns and so on. So here is one of the first people that are connected with some of these other assassinations. Also, it seems like E. Howard Hunt, who was also very much involved in the JFK assassination, that he was part of setting the whole team up for this assassination in Memphis, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, it requires such a huge cast of characters to pull these things off, and they must have really been quite proud of having been able to do that. But as we know, there's always collateral damage, because there are going to be people investigating into it who get close to the truth. And I think that there was a movie star that used to be on What's My Line, Dorothy Kilgallen. And she got very close to the truth, and she was murdered in addition to...
Indeed.
Who knows how many... You probably have a better idea about all the, dominoes that fell as a result of getting a little too close to the source.
I heard one man that works with statistics one time. He had made calculations around the JFK assassination, and he said that the chance of die untimely young was 1 trillion higher if you had any kind of connection with the JFK assassination than if you were a person. So that is...
Wow.
1 trillion higher.
Wow. Amazing.
But anyway, I don't agree with you when it comes to that such a massive amount of people. We're talking about small, small groups. They're not big, you know. We're talking about the same, like, for instance, the one group that was a major part of the JFK assassination went under the name of Operation 40. It was an ultra-secret hit team of mostly exiled Cubans that were... When you look at who were the shooters the day in Dealey Plaza, many, many of them are members of Operation 40. And the paymaster for that hit team was actually George Herbert Walker Bush.
Ah.
He was the guy who funneled the funds into this. And the man that was given, it was Dwight Eisenhower that gave his vice president, Richard Nixon, the task to create this hit team. And so Nixon gave the task to E. Howard Hunt, David Attlee Phillips, and Ted Shackley. These three people from the CIA were the ones that was given the task to create this hit team. And you will see these are the exact same people that we then see appear again and again and again. So the teams that carry these things are not big, I tell you, not big. And the only thing you then need to do is control people in key positions in the investigation, in the local police departments, in the among the judges and so on. Just key people, and that is through the Freemasonry network and Skull and Bones, these type of societies that you have control over them.
Right, right. And of course, Tavistock was involved with some of that. In the whole mind control and MK Ultra thing was hitting about the same time. So there were some pretty heavy duty some research done on mind control, which was used on humans, and in breaking down the in creating an alter, an alter ego, and in creating a sleeper cell, which a movie was made out of that about the president. Remember the
Manchurian Candidate?
Yes, exactly.
With Frank Sinatra.
Yes, with Frank Sinatra. An excellent movie, by the way.
Denzel Washington has made an updated version.
Yes, I like that one too. I thought that was very well done. Very well.
And I tell you now, when we talk about mind control and so on, there was so much going on in the 60s. And I mean, my God, has it continued? The answer is yes. But there is, when we talk about mind control and MKUltra and so on, and with the different, chips and stuff operated in the brain and so on, I have a mug photo, one of these from the prison of James Earl Ray, where when you see him from the side, the profile photo, they've shaven off and he has like a scar of 6-7 centimeters on his skull.
Oh.
Exactly the size of such an operation. And I've never heard any explanation about that thing, if he was hit by anything, or I just thought it was really interesting.
Well, along that line, I remember watching a video a while back that was showing pictures of Obama with some major scars on his skull. And I don't know, again, it's hard to tell whether these things are manufactured. And, you know, there's so much disinformation that's also put out there by these same people that they keep us off-center, and anything that you find out can easily be refuted. So it's easy to fall into the state where you just don't believe anything after a while.
This is the thing. This is why it is very, very difficult to find out the real truth, because just looking around on the internet, that will help you to a certain extent, but you really need to do your research on site. And also, as soon as these things happen, the sooner the better. And these events now, when we're talking about Martin King and so on, it's so many years ago, but there's still information coming out. There's still people alive. The shooter is still alive. And so on. I'm going to name him shortly, and so on. So anyway, as long the chances to get the real truth out there while people are still alive, we need to get it out so that these people will have a chance on their deathbed and so on to reveal what was actually going on, because there's so many mysteries around these things that would be of great importance to solve.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's time to get to the bottom of all this, and you know, pull the curtain back from the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. Anyway, so about it from a more or less 1 year before the assassination took place, the patsy was being prepared. I don't know if there was multiple patsies, which there normally are, that they have option A, B, C, and so on. But the only one that I really heard of is James Earl Ray in this case. And for some reason, these assassins are always, they always have three names. I don't know why that is, but more or less always. Huh. That and serial killers. Anyway, so in the 3 weeks before the killing of Martin Luther King, J. Edgar Hoover held a series of meetings with persons involved with the CIA and military intelligence in the Phoenix operation in Southeast Asia. This is official knowledge. But people involved in the Phoenix operation, one of the key people there was Ted Shackley, also called the Blonde Ghost, very crucial in the JFK assassination, one of the heads of Operation 40, and the head of Operation Phoenix in Saigon and Vietnam, a mass extinction program. Very, very brutal character. And later director of the Western Hemisphere for COVID operations. He and David Atlee Phillips held that position. And David Atlee Phillips, by the way, was the controller, the handler of no one less than Lee Harvey Oswald. He was the station chief in Mexico City. He was also the handler for Lee Oswald. He was also the handler for James Files, which is a man that claims to have been the shooter behind the picket fence. I totally believe this man. He's still alive in prison. And he was also the controller of a man called Michael Vernon Townley, a mass murderer that was part of many, many assassinations and was on location in Stockholm 1986 when the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme was taken out as well.
Wow.
So same characters, you know, in many, many of these assassinations. Anyway, one of the things also that it came to a point where they decided to get rid of King was that he was just about to get a whole march. The plan was to get at least 30,000 people to walk to Washington and camp outside the government buildings until a change was made. So, you know, they were panicking. They needed him stopped. And anyway, so a decision was made that he was to be taken out on April 4th, 1968. And normally he stayed at another hotel, but this time he was it was changed and he was transferred to the Lorraine Motel. And at that time, there was not that many hotels open for black people. And this Lorraine Motel was quite famous because many of the pop stars and singers and film stars and so on of African American background was staying at this hotel. You had Aretha Franklin, Nat King Cole, B.B. King, and
wow.
so on. So Lorraine Motel was the one they chose for him. And what happened when he arrived there, he had a series of meetings because there was so much going on. There was a big uprising going on, and there were demonstrations and lots of fighting going on. So King was there trying to find a solution and calm the whole scenario down.
Mm-hmm.
And normally when he arrived to Memphis or other places, he had like a police security detail around him, you know, police cars that was parked around where he was staying. He had the bodyguards and so on. But this day, suddenly these were withdrawn. They were moved back several blocks away from the motel. Also, African-American firemen and police officers and so on in the area were pulled back. They were told to go home. Firemen from the local fire station, which was right opposite where Martin Luther King was staying at the Lorraine Motel, they were also told to go home and so on. So all his normal protection was being pulled away, which is also standard procedure when they carry out these very, very cowardly ambushes, you know, where the target is left totally without protection and is being moved forward like a lamb to be slaughtered. Mm. It's a gruesome thing. Anyway, so first he was placed on the ground level, but that was not the perfect spot for shots to be fired at accurately. So they managed to get him up on the second floor. And that was through the godfather in the Dixie Mafia. His wife was part of with her connections and so on, to get the message over to the Lorraine Motel to change the room. So he changed the room up until to room 306 on with a balcony. So also the idea was that they wanted him to be sure that he would be at the Lorraine Motel at a specific time. They used one of the people that they had infiltrated his closest circle with. I mean, the whole civil rights movement, the whole Black Freedom Party, the Black Panthers, everything was infiltrated by the FBI and COINTERPRO and so on. They were on every level infiltrating, and also in his inner circle, and very, very well, it's awful when you see it, but one of the people who were part of this whole thing was Jesse Jackson. It's come forward now that he was well informed, and also it seems like that Martin King had found out that he was an agent, and he was just about to expose him, and that Jesse Jackson went back and said, you need to do it now, because otherwise he will blow my cover. Another one that was part of the whole thing was Reverend Billy Kiles. He was a local pastor, preacher, and the plan was that they should have a barbecue at 6 o'clock in the evening in his house. And so the staff at the Lorraine Motel was told not to serve any food to any of the rooms on the second floor, meaning that that King and so would be hungry and would not change plans for dinner. I mean, maybe he could have said, no, I'm tired, I want to have some food in my room and not go. But this Reverend Samuel Billy Kiles, some 20, 30 years after this happened, he was on a TV show, and he said things that was just incredible. What he said was, he's almost made like a career out of that. He was one of the last ones to be together with Dr. King and spend the last hour of his life together. It was Dr. Ralph Abernathy of the SCLC. it was Dr. Martin King, and then Reverend Samuel Billy Kyles, he says that he was in the room and they were talking about preacher stuff and so on. But Abernathy, he totally denies and said this man is a total liar. He was not in the room and so on. And also you will see that since there was surveillance, the whole fire station right opposite the Lorraine Motel was packed with people from different intelligence agencies, men in black suits. Nobody really knew who they were, but the whole place was packed. And there was surveillance across and over the Lorraine Motel. And some of the notes that was made there shows that Samuel Billy Kyles came there, knocked on the door, I think 10 to 6, and then left again. But anyway, what he said was that he was up on the balcony close to Martin Luther King before the shots fired. And then on TV, he said, "And then I moved away so he could get a clear shot."
Mm.
That was his words. I moved away so he could get a clear shot.
Wow.
I mean, who can say something like that if you were not part of
right. the right.
Or, you know, really disgusting. And in the operation also, it was said that it was the people in the inner circle that was part of this whole thing was told not to wear ties because the snipers and people involved, because there were a sniper team on location this evening as well, I'm going to come back to that, and they were informed, do not fire on targets without ties because they were in a distance, so it was very important that they did not have a tie on. And the two ones without ties, Samuel Billy Kyles and Jesse Jackson. And the last few minutes of King's life, there was also discussion about having a tie on for dinner and so on, exactly this thing.
Oh,
anyway, so I think it was about 1 minute past six. They were about to go to this barbecue, and Martin King was standing up on the balcony talking down to people in the open area in the parking lot in front of the Lorraine Motel. And some of them said that I think it was Andrew Young, said that I think it's going to be a bit chilly. Maybe you should bring an overcoat. So he said, okay, and was just about to turn around with this shot rang out, and he was hit right under the jaw on the right hand side, fell down. And when he fell down, lots of people ran. Instead of looking for who was the shooter, a lot of the people who were there ran up to see how he was doing. And one of the people that suddenly appeared there was a black undercover Memphis police officer who worked both for the FBI and the CIA. His name was Merrill McCullough. And you can see he is the one sitting, kneeling next to Martin King, feeling if he had a pulse and so on. It's also very strange because you have this famous photo where everybody is pointing in the direction, they say, towards the rooming room, the boarding room where James Earl Ray had been informed to leave his stuff and so on. He was not there when the shots were fired. But actually, all of these people that are pointing were down below with their backs turned towards the area where the shots were fired. So for them to point in that direction doesn't make any sense. But the one that was pointing, that started the whole pointing thing, was Jesse Jackson. So,
wow.
And then the other ones just followed. There's also some strange things about the rest of these people. There's one woman who she comes with sort of like a wagon, like for cleaning, for towels and blankets and so to go to washing. But this was 6 o'clock in the evening, and you never change sheets in the evening. So I don't know why that wagon or whatever you call it, basket thing, is right there. I'm sure it has something to do with the operation, but I don't know what, though. Anyway, but the thing is that it became over the years, very obvious that James Earl Ray had nothing to do with it. He was just the patsy that was there to take the place. Because what the witnesses on location saw was that the shots were fired from the bushes right in front of the Lorraine Motel and next to the fire station. And over the years, it turned out that the owner of a grill, it was called Jim's Grill, which was very close to the fire station and right next to the bushes as well. His name was Lloyd Jowers. He was a former Memphis police officer, and now the owner of this grill. And he was part of this plot where he was told he was given $100,000, and his task was to take care of the weapon, break it down, and so on, and get rid of it as soon as the shots were fired. Now, Jowers was later in a trial where William Pepper and the King family tried him for taking part of this whole assassination. And he pointed out that the shooter was a Memphis police officer called Earl Clark. He was a lieutenant, and he died in 1987. He was a very good shot and so on. But new information, according to William Pepper, has come forward. And he now claims that the real shooter was Lieutenant Earl Clark's partner, who was also a Memphis police officer, by the name of Frank Strausser. He was a crack shot. He was the best shot in Memphis, a former Vietnam War veteran. He was a first-class racist. He was in the KKK, I believe, and he's been pointed out by several different sources as the shooter. So, but it also seems that not only were there one shooter in the bushes, but there were also, it seems like triangular fire in position with backup teams, just like they very often have in these things. You've got one that is supposed to take care of the target on a street level, but then just in case there are any problems, you will have triangular fire snipers surrounding the area so that nothing will go wrong. Because the main thing is that the target is terminated. That is A and O in this whole thing. And it seems that the 111th Military Intelligence Group's based in Fort McPherson and Atlanta, Georgia, had him, King, under surveillance, including wiretapping, for quite a long time before. And as far as I know, there were a sniper team this evening where they were on top of the fire station, but also on top of the a water tower. And I believe on one building across as well, I think there was a team of 8 snipers in the neighborhood, all of them aiming at King when the shots rang out.
Wow.
But they were instructed that there were 2 targets, that they were Andrew Young and King. But Andrew Young was already down, or if he was back in the room, I think back in the room taking some aftershave or something like that when the shot rang out. But anyway, people in this sniper teams have come forward afterwards, and one of them said that he was totally surprised. He thought that because he had the King in the sight, and just when he was about to fire, boom, somebody else shot, and he thought, oh my God, it's one of our own team that was just that didn't keep the timeline properly, but instead the shots came down from the bushes.
Interesting.
There were 2 people in the bushes, and this is also standard. You got one spotter, you got one shooter. That is standard procedure. And it seems like the spotter was Earl Clark and the shooter was Frank Strausser. Now, right after the shots rang out, witnesses saw somebody move around in the bushes, and one woman called Olivia Catling, she observed a man in a checkered shirt run from the alley beside a building across from the Lorraine and jump into a green 1965 Chevrolet and then drive off. This happened exactly that when another police car came up behind him, but the police car just let them go instead of stopping him, which would be the normal reaction since the second police car was there because of the shooting. Here, they just let him go. And the other one, which I believe was then Earl Clark, I believe that he had the uniform of a fireman. And then when after the shots rang out, a lot of different firemen came out from the fire station, running across the street towards the Lorraine Motel, and he just jumped down the wall and mingled with them and just disappeared in the crowd. But now, I always thought that Martin Luther King died that day on the balcony, that he was dead there and taken to hospital and that was it. But it turns out that that is not the case. He survived the shooting. He never became conscious again, but his heart was still beating. And part of this whole setup, when you look at these conspiracies on a big scale, they need to control the emergency wards as well. They need to control the doctors and the people that do the autopsy and so on, because that is of extreme importance. And the Dixie Mafia's godfather, Russell Atkins, he had a family doctor. And this family doctor worked, he was the chief of surgery at the St. Joseph Hospital. His name was Dr. George Breen Bland. And he was also an extreme racist and so on. And in the meetings before this assassination, he had said, just make sure that they bring King to my hospital. Just bring him there and I will take care of him. Okay. Well, when after King was taken with the ambulance, they did not drive him to the John Gaston Hospital where bullet wounds were normally taken. Instead, they took him to St. Joseph Hospital, the exact hospital where Dr. George Breen Bland was in charge. And there was a nurse there, a surgical nurse called Lula Mae Shelby, that was, she worked with Dr. Bland, Breen Bland, and they were trying to save King there. He was up on the operation table and so on. They were doing everything they could. And then Breen Bland came in with two men in suits. And he just said, get out of here. Stop working on that. I don't know if it's okay, the word they use. Stop working on that nigger and let him die.
Wow.
Yeah, awful, awful. And then he told the crew to get out. And the nurses and the rest of the people left, she turned around, she heard them sort of do something. So she turned around and she saw all three of them spit on Martin Luther King while he was still alive. And then Dr. Breen Bland took a pillow and put over his face and held it there until he stopped breathing.
Wow. Wow. Well, that is some pretty shocking information that I've never heard before. My goodness.
It is so gruesome. So I don't know what to say. It's just so, why it's so vicious this way and cold this way, these things.
Oh yeah. It's horrifying. Yeah. It's absolutely horrifying.
So
And to, you know, and what's even worse is to know that this is how things operate from the top down. That this is really getting close to the true nature of the beast that is trying, or that believes it has already taken over the world.
Yeah, it is. I think it's important to understand the mentality behind these forces, because they are very, very cold, and their way of solving problems are very brutal. The only thing they fear almost is the truth, and so this is why they target truth speakers and peace seekers and so on. So it's a scary area to get into.
Doesn't this partially also connect to Project Paperclip, which brought over the Nazi scientists and installed them in various programs, MK Ultra, Artichoke, Operation Midnight, Climax, and a lot of other places, and the head of NASA and so on and so forth. That was something that could have been a precursor to all of this brutal, cold violence, because now we have Homeland Security. These are just paper cutouts of Nazi Germany, and fluoride in the water, that was used in Nazi Germany as well to dumb down the masses, and we've got it in the United States. So vaccinations, and it ties into chemtrails. I mean, all of this paints a picture that is really extremely brutal and cold.
And this is why it's so important that we expose it, because people, other members of the of Operation 40, they have continued very close to, especially George Bush Senior, and followed him all the way up. They were part of creating the Homeland Security thing. They were the Patriot Act. They were part of also behind 9/11 and so on. These are very brutal, brutal men.
Yes. Well, you know, people have a hard time understanding that the Bush family was involved in the global operations, going back to Bush's father was supplying weapons for Nazi Germany, and IBM was involved with sending computers over there, and so on and so forth. There were a lot of corporations that were involved with supporting the other side, and the people behind that, those are the ones that we are looking at indirectly through a lens, because you can't see it directly.
But it goes further than that. You know, like Prescott Bush, which is the father of George Herbert Walker Bush, the grandfather of the latest president, he would, just like you say, he was one of the people who funneled the money into the Hitler war machine. Mm-hmm. And he was almost tried for treason after the Second World War. But his father was part of creating a fake, the so-called Zimmerman telegram, that was part of pulling, or was actually the reason why the U.S. was pulled into World War One.
Mm.
You know, so these people have been around, I tell you, and they've got footprints of blood everywhere. It is a gruesome, gruesome bunch of super, super, super criminals. I mean, super criminals. When you look at the Bush family, it is the more you look into that, the crowd. Oh my God. Especially George Bush Senior, not Junior. He hasn't got the brains for it. But Jeb Bush and Boy George, both of them were heavily involved in the cocaine import as well. You know, like Chip Tatum, who was one of the pilots, who is a friend of mine and a CIA whistleblower. He was one of the pilots in the Iran-Contras scandal, and he has told me, and he also witnessed how Jeb Bush received cocaine and so on. And I tell you, another member of Operation 40, which was the ultra-secret hit team, was a man called Barry Seal. He was a super, super pilot who flew these assassins in and out in different locations. But he was also the one who set up the whole cocaine import business that started the whole crack epidemic and was exposed in the Iran-Contras scandal.
Huh.
But his plane, he had a special little beautiful plane that he flew in drugs, especially received by Jeb Bush and also Boy George, especially Jeb in Florida were the one receiving it. And just 1 week before the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme was assassinated, Barry Seal was assassinated in Baton Rouge. And just a few weeks after he was killed, the same plane that he was using to fly around was owned by George Bush Jr.
Mm.
He just took over that little beauty.
Mm,
coincidence?
Yeah. Right, right. Well, and we can only imagine that the technology that is available today, because we know that there is an entire civilization that's been created in secret that's so far advanced that it rivals Star Trek. And that's the result of all that secret experimentation. And so, I mean, this just goes on and on and on. And with the technology of nanotechnology and transhumanism and cyborgs and clones coming into the picture, it's going to be an interesting world when the truth starts to come out, which seems to take a very long time for things to simmer up to the surface. But as you pointed out in another show, people have cell phones now, so the control of information is important.
Can I also point out that we're talking about Operation Paperclip and so on, which was in 1945 and 46 and so on. At the exact same time, the CDC was created in Atlanta, which is the Center of Control of Disease Control. Uh-huh. And I would very much suggest that we're talking about Nazi scientists there behind that one as well.
Yeah.
And this is from the CDC. This is where all of these Ebola scares come. It's the
yep.
Zika virus, the swine flu. It comes straight from them. And they're also the owners of the patents.
Yes.
They own the patent on the Zika and the Ebola virus.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
So and go to their website. I mean, this is a massive big thing. And you will even see that there are warnings and posters you can order of zombies.
Wow.
It's like bizarre.
Well, you know, a UK Bayer was found to have distributed injections. They were vaccinations or some kind of injection for, I think they were given mainly to kids that was designed to help them with something or other. But they were laced with HIV, and they were caught with their pants down. And millions of those went out, and they basically said, well, we just didn't want to lose the money. But I suspect that that's just a line that they give you when they get caught, because those things are done intentionally.
Yeah. You have these, there's also blood scandals, for instance, in France years ago, some of the people that were involved in the Ulla Palme assassination as well, that were caught with their pants down. There was a big scandal in France where I think it was 10,000 people infected by HIV because they had spread blood, that was infected in hospitals and so on. I mean, you don't do things like that by accident.
No, there's no accidents.
And not if you see the mentality behind the New World Order and so on. This is part of the game.
It's ruthless, and it would have to be that way. So, you know, Ole, this has been one of the most interesting conversations we've had to date, and we are just out of time. So I'm going to hope that you'll come back soon and we can continue, talking about some of these things so that, we can gain greater awareness. Would you like to, is there anything you'd like to mention that's coming up real quickly before we sign out?
I'm just a one-man band. If anybody wants to help me, please, on my website, lightonconspiracies.com, I've got my newsletter, donation buttons, buy my books, and so on. This is the only way I can go on. Anyway, but I would be one of the speakers at the JFK assassination in Dallas in November. And also, if you want, we can do the next program about the assassination of Robert Kennedy, which is very, very close in hand in time and also with the people behind it.
Yes, that would be wonderful. That'd be wonderful. Well, Ole, thank you so much for coming back. I always enjoy talking to you. And people buy Ole's books to support his work because he operates on donations alone. So this is important stuff to support. So thank you again, and I had a wonderful conversation with you.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.